So this is playing different keys. I guess I heard from Mike we have an hour and 45 minutes.
Something like that.
So we may not take the full time.
We can jam.
We could do that. We could practice what we could. I could just start throwing tunes at you and play Kevin and Caroline and C. So everybody has, when they start playing jam sessions, has the same problem that not everyone sings in G or A or B. And women in particular tend to sing songs that are designed, that were written for men to sing in the low keys, in G to G to B. They're singing in C and D. And so you have a couple of options. You get used to playing in G, and when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So you take your capo, you slap it on the 7th fret, and you play in G. Of course, half of your neck is back here. If you paid $2,000 for your banjo, you're leaving $1,000 on the side of the capo. Plus, the notes that you get down low are really nice notes. Mm-hmm. The banjo tends to sound best, fullest down on the bottom of the neck. So you want to figure out a way to play in those keys. Plus, if you forget your capo and somebody hands you one of these, you try to get it on up here, and it just
won't go.
So to save embarrassment, you want to be able to play in other keys. And the natural keys to play in are the same as the keys of the primary chords of bluegrass songs, which I think is a coincidence, but I haven't really thought it through. But here's why. You play in G, and you can play in G. Wow. Didn't have to come here to hear that. You can play in G sharp. Put the capo on 1, 2, and 5th string up 1. Play like you played in G. You play in A, B flat, B. And when you get to B, you hit the place where the neck gets wide. And that's where the capo kind of stops. And that's also where things start to sound a little tin. So it'd be nice to be able to play in open C. It's open C gets you back down to the bottom of the neck. So C gives you C, C sharp, D, E flat, E. Wait, did I do that right? C sharp, and D flat together. C, C sharp, D, E flat. Wait,
E in the F, yeah.
E. Right, and so you get to E. You've still got F and F sharp, so you need one more key. Well, you could play an F. Actually, F's kind of a cool key to play in, but it's a little bit out there. So you want to play in D. D gives you D, E flat, E, F, F sharp. Now you're at F sharp. You're back to G if you go to the 5th fret, and you can you play all 12 keys. C and D work in particular because they share so many notes with the key of G. If you looked at the scales side by side, and this is probably a bunch of hopefully brief excursions into music theory. If you write down a G scale, if you look at the circle of fifths, you look at G. Directly to one side of it is C, and directly to the other side is D. And if you take those scales and you match them up, you put the G scale here. Start the C scale. The top half of the C scale, the top four notes, are the same as the bottom four notes of the G scale. The top four notes of the G scale are the same as the bottom four notes of the D scale. So there are a lot of notes and a lot of phrasing that those three keys have in common. They also share open strings. This, the C chord includes G, which means you've got both of those open strings available to you as part of the chord. The key of D, obviously, has D note in it. You've got two of those also. So in both of those keys, you've got two open strings that are part of the native chord. So what I want to do is start by looking at G. And let me ask before I start, how many of you feel kind of comfortable playing a break? You know, if somebody introduces a song and maybe you haven't heard it before, okay.
Can we just make one up?
Yeah, that's the question.
Not me.
Okay. Not me. We may end up using the whole hour and 45 minutes. Because this is a topic that's dear to my heart. So let's talk about putting breaks together in general. Mm-hmm. Because I'm actually in the middle of a session right now, Dan's in the class, where we're doing 6 weeks, we're doing 9 hours on exactly this topic. Wow. And pretty much, we may actually touch on C and D next time, depends on how this class goes. When you're presented with a tune, you have to pick out a couple of things that you're going to need to create a break. One of those is the chord progression. Right, so how many of you, if you're in a jam session and you're listening to a song, maybe you've heard it before, maybe you haven't, but how do you tell what you vamp, right?
Right.
You all vamp. How do you know what chords to vamp on?
Look at the guitar player's hand.
That's a big way. You look at the guitar player's hand, and those chords, the guitar chords in particular, have distinctive shapes. Mm-hmm. One reason banjos are better than guitars, because guitar players have to learn all these different shapes. We just have three to move them up and down. So you look at the guitar player's hand and you see that. Another way to do it is to hear the difference, hear the intervals between the chords. So if you're playing 90%, 95% of bluegrass songs, you're dealing with three chords. You go to five chords, you're probably up to 98%. If you add, say, E minor and A. And so there aren't that many combinations. But here's the secret, and this is what I'm going to be coming back to this over and over again in this class. The notes themselves, the chords themselves, don't matter. It's the intervals. It's the difference between what's being played, between what was just played, because you're never dealing in the future here, between what was just played and what's being played right now. And so, if I play that, the cabin pines in the hills, right, and you hear that progression. If the song's in G, your ears should be trained to hear that chord to C. Okay? But if, let's say I play the song in A. Let's say we're doing it in A. So I'm putting capo on. You don't have to do this. But I throw on a capo in A. And I go, this, and I play, what am I doing? I'm playing in G on a shorter neck. Mm-hmm. Right? So now I do, there's a cabin in the pines in the hills of Caroline. So, does that sound, now that we're here, does that sound any different from what I just played in G? It's the same interval. And so what you're hearing is always the interval. You're not, unless you've got perfect pitch, which is rare and actually incredibly impractical, you're hearing that difference. And so whatever key you're in, you should be tuned to how a G chord sounds against a C chord, you know, going from one to the other, or a C against a G, or a D against a G. All of those combinations, because there aren't really that many of them. Even if you're dealing with five chords, there aren't that many of them. But certainly if you're dealing with three chord songs, there's six of them. And so you just hear them and you go along with them. And actually, as much as it's useful to watch the guitar player's hand, it's a lot more useful to be able to hear those intervals. And
I just go by if you're in the G and it sounds bad, it's a 4. If it sounds really bad,
it's a 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, and if you're in G and it sounds bad, you've got a 50-50 chance of getting it right. And if you make a change and it sounds bad, you know where to go.
Next time you'll know.
Right. So at worst, you do 2 bad sounding chords and you're in the right place, and you've learned something, which is the important thing, because there's never, and nobody takes points off for mistakes, particularly in jam situations. And this is low pressure music. And you want to keep in mind that everybody who's there is there to learn and to have a good time just like you are. So nobody's going to throw an eraser at your head for playing a C chord instead of a D. And you'll pick up on that the next time you'll hear that interval and it'll make sense. So when you change keys, all of those intervals move with you. So if you're playing in C, you hear the equivalent of that, G to C, is C to F. And by itself, that sounds like 2 different things, right? But if I do, there's a cabin in the mines in the hills of Caroline, right? Or if I do, there's a cabin in the mines in the hills of Caroline, right? That's a way to tie in these intervals. Don't think of them in a vacuum. Think of them in connection with a song you know, and that you do know the chords to, and it'll start to make more sense. The problem with the way a lot of people approach this stuff is that they look too narrow. If you try to just step back a little bit from what's the chord change to where have I heard this before, and it can help you a lot. The same thing is true with melody and timing, and this is a place where I find a lot of people have trouble. Not just figuring out what to play, but figuring out how long to play it for. Because you hear a long chord, and you're focused, if you're not the singer, you're focused on playing the chord, and playing the chord, and playing the chord. You're playing John Hardy, and there's... I see John Hardy again, right? And when do you get out of that? If I'm just doing this, okay, when do I change back to the G?
Just before the end.
Right, just... It's like the guy on the bus, you ask him where, you know, what stop to get off, and he said, just watch me and get off the stop before I do. And so by the time you know something, it's too late. It's already happened. So you have to find some way to know it in context. And when you're playing a song, absolute rock bottom, most important thing you can do is sing the song to yourself, hum it to yourself in your head. Singing is better because the humming sometimes can get confusing also. It doesn't have enough landmarks in it. So if you're doing John Hardy, right, you can maybe hear through this. Okay, what's going on here? Right, and lost. But if you're singing the song to yourself, you want to see John Hardy get away, Lord, Lord. You want to see John Hardy get away. Right, it's obvious. As soon as you do that, you know exactly when the chord's going to change. Right, because this is what makes one song different from another. Right, there are only 12 notes. In bluegrass, basically, there are only 3 chords. You put them in different orders, but that doesn't help you much. It's the progression, it's the length of the chords, it's the melody. And you put those things, and in some cases, it's the words. There's songs that are exactly the same except for different words. But putting that everything you do into that context gets you, guides you through the song, and you get to where you're going. So now we've got two elements. We've got the chord progression, and we've got the melody. And hopefully, you know, it's always good if you know you're going to be playing a song. If you're in a jam session, they always play certain songs every time you get together. It's good for those songs to learn at least a verse and the chorus, the words, because that gives you something to sing in your head while you're playing the song. If it's a new song, then you kind of you're on your own, but that's part of the learning process. So we've got chords, we've got the timing and the melody, and we've got the words. Now you want to put that on the banjo. You want to turn that into a banjo ray. Here's where the stuff that I'm... actually, pretty much everything I'm saying in this class applies to G, C, and D. So I'm going to talk about it in the context of playing in G for now, but then we're just going to turn it right around, and I'll show you how it works in the other keys also. So when you're playing a melody... anybody here from this morning, from my coaching session? No, good. So I can say all the same stuff I said in the coaching session. No one will know. If you look at the melody of a song, there's certain things you can tell. First of all, the chord changes and the notes that you choose for melody generally change also. The notes that you're using for melody are... It's too much to say are taken from, but are based on the scale of whatever chord's being played at the same time. So if I'm playing a song and there's a G chord being played, if I'm watching the guitar player's hand and there's a G chord, that the notes that I'm singing, the notes the singer is singing, are generally either from the G scale, or this being bluegrass, they're blue notes, which are two extra notes that sort of you use to give color to a tune. So that gives you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That doesn't count because it's the same as that note. 8, 9. So that's 9 notes that are going to be most of the notes that are melody. So if what you're trying to do is find the melody of a tune, what we've just done is taken all of this, all these choices that you have, and boiled them down in any given moment to 9 notes. Makes it a little easier to pick. Okay. Here's another thing. The first of those 9, the first of the notes that's played when there's a chord change. So the chord just changed to G. The first note that's played is almost guaranteed to be one of the notes of the G chord, one of those 3 notes. So now we've just taken the universe, boiled it down to 9 notes, boiled it down to 3 notes. Somebody's been in my class talking about tension and resolution. I boil this down to 15 seconds because I have to say it. There's always somebody who hasn't heard it. But music, 2 things: tension most of 15 seconds waiting.
Yeah.
Right? Tension. Someone want to finish the sentence?
No.
Resolution. Okay. I don't even have to tell you what to play.
Yeah.
Right. This chord has all the information in it that you need to know where I'm going next. In terms of melody, tension. The closer a note is, not pitch wise, but the closer in terms of tonality to the bass note, to the root note of the chord, the more resolved it is. So the most resolved thing you can do with a G scale is play G. Right? And what does it mean that that's resolved? It means, what's my next note? There is none. I got no place to go. So that's completely resolved. Okay? That, I go back here. Right? Go back here. That's a little more, it's a little farther away, and it's not part of the chord. Maybe I connect back through another note of the chord and get back and resolve. Right. All of, and no matter where you start, right, you know when it's done. Because I'm landing back on that G. So there are these notes that are essentially settled notes. They're part of the chord, part of the major chord. And those notes are, one of those three notes is likely to be the note that starts this chord. So I play, tonight I'm alone without you, my dear. Tonight I'm alone. Down the road from me, there's an old hollow tree. Down the road from me. If I had the wings of an angel. Right? And I could do this forever, and chances are every song, and you could name the songs if you want, every song is going to start with one of those. Yeah, and actually that's three notes. I've got two octaves. Chances are they're all going to start with one of those three notes. So this is where ear training, you know, in music classes they call it ear training, but it's just learning what it is you're hearing. One thing I noticed it this morning, actually, I said to four people in a coaching session, I said, play me, I sang the beginning note of a song, and I said, play me the first note I'm singing. And three out of four got that, and the fourth one got that. Right? Because I'm singing this note, and they're hearing that, and it's the same note, because it's harmonious. It sounds close enough to it that it works. So it's you have to be able to hear what note it is you hear, and you can practice that. You can play a tune, just put a recording on of a tune, and just pick through the melody. Just try to find it. And there are plenty of songs that you can go out to the internet and get a recording and get the lyrics along with melody notes. There's an excellent book on Oak Publications that Pete Wernick wrote called The Bluegrass Songbook, which has a lot of 70 or 75 tunes that you hear in jam sessions all the time with a three-line staff that is just those three strings, second, third, and fourth strings, which conveniently are tuned the same on banjo as they are on guitar. So you can use his book with either a banjo or a guitar and pick through the notes. So take Blue Ridge Cabin home, listen to it, try to figure out what the notes are, then look it up in Pete's book or on the internet and see if you're right. That's going to teach you two things. It's going to teach you your absolute pitch. So there's, okay, not right. There's, so you hear that's the same note. It's also going to teach you intervals, relative pitch. So when you hear there's a well, you can hear that those notes aren't on the scale, right? There's a well. There's a So you see how many notes I had to go through. There's no. Well, and that was just going through the scale. So what you'd love to be able to do is hear those two notes and know how far apart they are. And that's something you have to learn. It's not natural. It's not natural. It's not not something that you grew up with. But once you can do it, first of all, music will be a lot more fun to listen to because you'll start hearing the structure. You'll start hearing the stuff that's in it. It's also going to be much easier, or even in some cases possible, to play. So this is sort of a home thing. You can't do this in a jam session because you can't stop and say, "What was that note?" So go home and work through some tunes. You don't even need recordings. Just how many people here know Blue Ridge Cabin Home? Or Will the Circle Be Unbroken? Or, okay, that's a good one. Will the Circle Be Unbroken? Right, you can sing that to yourself. You don't need a recording to know where it is. So I'll tell you what, everybody take a minute and just I'm going to give you the first note. First note is the open fourth string. Just work through the melody. Will the circle be unbroken? Okay. Stop playing when you've got it so I know when to start talking again. Okay, good. So the lowest note in there is that low D, and the highest note is the high D. Now I'm going to show you an easier way to find that melody. So you all found it. You want to just play it through? Just play once in unison? I'll do 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. So 3 is the first note of the tune. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. No rolls, just the melody. Okay, that's far enough. That's good. We got it. There are a couple of things I was watching for. I had a method to asking you to do that. This song has some really long pauses in it. Right? Everybody nailed the melody, but there were some notes, some people who sort of jumped the gun on getting will the circle. Right? That's a long note. The whole word circle, which is held out, is one note. And so I'm asking you to just play the melody. And I did that. I said no rolls for a reason. That's why. Hey, wondering. Right, and you get into that note, you just play it, and it fades away, and you're left with nothing. But remember what I said before. If you're singing a song to yourself, will the circle be unbroken? I'll bet if I won't do this because I don't want to embarrass all of you or myself. If I asked you all to sing this song without doing any backup or anything, you would all hit those notes at exactly the right times. Right? You would all change at the right times. What that says is that you all know how to count. Right, you all know how to know how long these notes should be. You just need to use that tool, the same tool that you use to sing a song, to time the notes that you're playing. And when you're playing a break, you're using that same technique, but instead of using it to figure out when to come back from a long silence, you're figuring out how long to sustain a forward roll before you move on to the next note. And with rolls, it's good in a way because you're putting down little milestones in the middle of this long note. But it's also bad because these milestones are crooked. Right? You're playing a forward roll, you're playing groups of three notes. How many groups of three notes does it take to fill eight notes? Right? So the only to fill an eight note space, you're talking thirds now. And nobody in music talks thirds. You only know how to divide by two if you're a musician. So playing or singing while you play gives you, it separates your counting of the melody, your counting of the tune, from the notes you're playing. So you don't have to worry about how long to play a forward roll or how many notes to put in it. You just play it until a little voice in your head tells you to move on. And hopefully, you know, it's the right little voice in your head and it's telling you the right thing. We won't go there either. So, again, back to, you know, lesson one, sing while you play. Big deal. But I mean that for real. That's not it. So let me show you when you were working through the tune and getting the melody, you were kind of going a note at a time. Right? That works while you're picking out a melody, but what would happen if you tried to play a break that way, play a roll that way? What would happen to your rolls? You begin, and everything seems fine. But here, right, what happened?
Yeah.
You missed the chord.
The chord's not there.
The chord, there's no chord information. Plus, not only is there no chord information, but you've got a guitar player and a bass player back there going like that, and you're going like that, and you've got all these clashes because you're not playing the same chord there. So, you want not only to be playing the melody, but also to be playing the chord. And here comes the first big lesson about playing in other keys also. When you play, when there's a chord change, what happens? That you still, the rule that says that you're taking the notes from the scale doesn't change. What changes is which scale, right? So when you go to C chord in the second line of Will the Circle Be Unbroken, now you're working from a C scale, not a G scale. Cold and cloudy day, back to G there. So when you're looking for the melody notes, you want to be looking for the melody notes from the C chord, not from the open neck. So here's something that's cool. This is in the handout, so don't look at it now, but I'm going to want you to do this in a minute. So when you're in G, you want to look at a G scale. And G scale is going to have these three notes with another four notes connecting them together. So there's that. So you play it. Don't play this, but everybody know what a major scale sounds like. So you've got that scale. Plus, that starts on the third string. You go down until you hit the lowest note you've got, which is low D. So you've got a G scale that starts from low D. And ends on high G. Without going above the fifth fret. This is all first position stuff. And that's where you get your notes from, while there's a G chord playing. When the song goes to C, you're going to work from a C scale. Well, the easiest way to get a C scale, here's a C chord, you've got three notes of the C scale already. Right? So you want to find the other notes. And so when we were in G, the G note was on the third string. We're in C, C note's on the second string, and I'll get to that in a second. So D is the open third. Oh, open first. E is in the chord, so put the chord back. So back down, and you get E. You got your pinky here. Put that down on the third fret. There's F. Third fret on the first string. And then there's C. There's G. you're only on the second string. You've got three strings you haven't touched yet. You just keep going down. So just like in G, you get your melody from the G notes. Here you get it from the C notes. And there are two really important things to remember when you do this. One is you have to pick a finger to use to make the notes that aren't naturally part of the chord. The general rule is one finger, one fret. So if you're playing a chord that has a finger down on the first string, on the first fret, on whatever string, on the first fret, any note you need on the first string, on the first fret, you can use that finger for. So you move across the neck, you don't move up and down. If you need a note on the second fret, you're playing the C chord, you have a choice of two fingers. Right? And if you need something higher, you've got this free finger knocking around doing nothing. And that's the finger you use.
On the G scale, you added a B flat and an F for
right.
color. What would you add on the C?
So that would be first string, first fret. Is the flat third.
Okay.
And third string, third fret is the flat seven. Right. So when you're playing on the second fret, you have a choice of two fingers to use. But here comes the other part. This is the other important thing about it. When you're playing a melody on the banjo, you're not just playing a melody. It's what happened when I tried to play Will the Circle Be Unbroken with one finger. I didn't have context. I didn't have chord. So what I want when I roll is to have the extra notes, the notes that aren't the melody, also be part of the chord. So when I have these two fingers to choose from, but when I roll, my middle finger is pretty much always going to play the first string. So that should lock that finger down on the first string. So anything I actually need to do on the second fret, I'm going to do with my middle finger. I'll take it off the fourth string and move that up and down. And so when I play my C scale, there's the one exception. I'm taking my finger off the first string because the melody note I'm looking for is the open fourth first string. So that finger's in the way. I can also, if you notice on the handout, you'll see this on the handout, I can get that note on the second string, third fret also. Same set of notes. The difference is when I roll, what comes with the roll. That was just moving my pinky back and forth on the third fret. And so you go almost anywhere with it. But the key is when there's a chord being played, you lock yourself into the chord position. And you modify it to get the melody notes you're looking for. G is no different. It's just the chord position you're locking yourself into is this one. No left hand at all. So when you're playing C, it's the same thing. You got low D up to high G. Attention, anyone? Right. But because you're playing melody fragments, that really doesn't get in the way when you're playing. Now, D gets a little more interesting, but it's also where the real payoff comes from. So I want everyone to do this one, because this is something that I'm going to want to come back to during the rest of this class. So here's a D chord. This is the old familiar D-shaped D chord. melodies on the root note is on the second string. So we're going to go down. So from D, there's going to be a lot of combinations here. So D, you're going to move your index finger over the second string and lift your middle finger off the second string. And there's C sharp. That's the next note down in the melody. In the scale. Now you're going to put the D chord back together, move your ring finger off the fourth string to the third. There's B. Right? Put that finger back, and the A is part of the D chord. So you just play the third string, you got A. Okay? Open third string is G. So play that. Put the chord back together. Play the fourth string in the chord. F sharp. Move your index finger over to the fourth string, E. And put the whole D chord back together, but leave the fourth string open. And there's your D. Nice. We finally get resolved. Right, we couldn't do it in C, we can do it in D. So everybody play that for a minute or so. And before you do that, actually there's one more thing to do. We're only on the second string, so we can go up. So from D chord, index finger to the first string, and lift your pinky, E. Put the chord back together, play the first string, F sharp, fifth string. G, you can do that too, yeah. But fifth string is G. So just like C and D, you've got an octave and a fourth. You can go from low D, which is in all three scales, up to high G, which is also in all three scales. And those, so now you have the tools to pick the melody out using a song, using these chord shapes. So I want you to take a minute. I'll stop you when it's appropriate, and just play those positions. So everything, remember, everything is based on that chord shape. Circle the unbroken. Now you've got this set of tools. So let's start. Will the circle be unbroken in G? Will the circle be unbroken by end? That's all G. So all of that's done from open position. So a lot of your notes are going to be open strings, but not all of them. So will the... Right, find these notes while we go along. Will the circle be unbroken? Okay, so you should have found two notes you had to prep for. Will the circle be unbroken? Right, and I know you have to do it twice. By unbroken, by end. Right, that's all the same. Okay, everybody there?
Yep.
Okay. The next chord is C, and there are only four melody notes associated with that chord. By Lord, by and So here, what I want you to do is make a C chord and find those notes. And you're going to find, again, most of those notes. Right. Most of those notes are already, you're already playing. They're in the chord. My Lord, by and. So you find one note you had to move for. My Lord, by and. Right. Just the A. Right. Okay, bye. Now we're back to G. Bye, there's a better home waiting. So, you know, I'm getting ahead of it already, but keep going until you get to the D.
Okay.
That's where you stop. That's where the chord, this chord changes. So, better home waiting, the sky, Lord. Stop there. So, everybody got it? So now for D, you could just do that, right? But I really want you to do this in the chord. So put down a D chord and get in the. That's the old D, right? And you notice only one finger to do that. Okay, sky. G chord, G note, downbeat of the song, obviously you've resolved. So now you've framed out the whole song. You've got it all in, you've got the chords, you know where the melody notes come out of those chords. Now what's left is to roll those. So now, there are two kinds of notes that you generally... that you have to deal with when you're doing a bluegrass song on the banjo. One is short notes, chord notes generally, where the easiest thing to do is just play them. Don't try to embellish them. Don't put in fill notes between them. Just play them. It's nice and simple. Let the song breathe. Let the phrase like it be sung. But then you get to circle. Forever. So, roll. And then, but beyond, more quarter notes. So here's what I want you to do. Let me give you one final instruction, then I'm going to set you loose for a couple minutes to do this. Play the quarter notes when you can. Play rolls when there's a long note coming. If you feel like you're not confident about getting out of that roll in time to play the next note, just stop one note before that change. An open quarter note is like a reset on the banjo. After you stop and pause for a note, you can start anywhere. Right. You don't have the usual rules about not playing the same string and not playing the same finger. You just stop and pick up again on the next place. So those are the instructions. So now you've got all the pieces. See what you can do. Put them together. So play Will the Circle Be Unbroken. I wanted to have you do that unstructured just to sort of get the feel of it. But what I want to do is play, I'm going to play and sing a song. And I want you all to play a break, whatever you've been working on. And I want, you know, by giving you the words and the timing, I'm going to make it hopefully easier for you to fit everything in. And what will happen gradually as you do this is you're going to find... You're going to get a feel for how long these notes are, and you're going to have you can make some connections about particular roles or particular phrasings that fill a specific amount of time. And so you'll just throw one of those in. But for now, you're sort of feeling your way. Just play what you think will fit. I'm going to play it slow, and we'll see. I was hearing the speed, everyone's pretty much doing it. I'll try to match that. So I'll do will the, and you just come in on circle. Two. Will the circle be well, no, it's not going to be the first time. I wasn't expecting that, but you got through it, and you saw where to do what. What I was listening for was something like quarter notes, roll, quarter notes, roll. That was a little advanced. Let me start off. Roll. Quarter notes, roll. Was kind of like that. So that's good. So you see how that works, and that you can apply that to most any song. So I want to go back to some. Is there questions about that? Because I'm going to move to a slightly different topic. When I said that what we did with the D chord was particularly hard, but also sort of the value in this. One thing you might notice about that D scale was that it was almost all closed strings. There's an open G and there's an open D. Okay, so we can cheat a little bit and get rid of those open strings. We go stretch up to the fifth fret on the fourth string to get G. And remember, you want to keep as much of the chord down as you can.
Why would you do that stretch if you have it wide open?
Well, here's the thing. We're doing this to be pretty complete about the scale. When you're really playing, if you're in a situation where you need that G, half the time you'll be able to get it somewhere else, and half the time you won't care. You can just improvise around it and play a melody that's just slightly different and doesn't include that note. And that's really the more common thing to do. It's really kind of uncommon to do these stretches. But I just did it to make sure we were sticking with a complete scale. Because here's what you get for this. That's a D scale. What happens if I want to do a G scale? I take that D position, that D-shaped chord, move it up to the ninth fret to be a G chord, same shape, and I play exactly the same thing. And there's a G scale. You want a G sharp scale? Wow. Any place you go with that closed position chord, you can play a scale. If you can play a scale, you can play a melody. And now we're getting to the idea of playing the two keys. Only took us an hour. But that's cool, because we got it, we had it. It's the only class period I could have done this in, so this is really good. If I'm droning on too long, let me know and I'll wrap it. But this is I like where this is going, and I hope this works. So here's the thing, that will give you a major scale any place you decide to drop a D-shaped chord, right? You can do the same thing with an F-shaped chord. With an F-shaped chord, the root is on the first string and the fourth string. There's a G chord, those are both G. On the handout, I have those scales. So we have the time. Let me just run through this. So play a G chord. I hear an E flat. F shape G chord. Right. So high note, first string. Move your middle finger across to the first string. There's F sharp. Reassemble your G chord. Now move your ring finger from the fourth string to the second string. There's E. Right. Put the G chord, reassemble the G chord with the second string as D. Fourth string to the third, fourth finger to the third string, C, B on the third string. You have to cheat to get A, and stretch back, and then the fourth string of the chord is G. So there's your G scale. Which becomes an A scale. Right. So, you have to stay on the third string for that tune. Right. So, this is too far away. You can't reach this and hold any part of the chord.
So the idea is when you get a chord, you have to scale down the note.
Right.
You go anywhere, and right. You can pick out the melody, and then tell me I'm going to play in C, so I go C up here, and then
right.
I go all of that. And just
exactly.
Thank you.
Now, we got one more chord shape left. That's the bar, right. And actually, this makes sense, because you deal with the bar two different ways. Way number one is you bar one finger, and you play exactly the same scale you would play if you're playing a G scale over. All bar is that open G moved up to a different chord. So now you lose the use of your index finger, but you can, if you really want to stretch it, you can get there. So in a bar chord, the root note of the scale is on the third string. So that's where you start. It's like playing jazz guitar. So you play everything out of positions. The other way to deal with the bar is to play with individual fingers. And when you do that, you're not going to move up to get the scale. You can move down. So experiment with these. We can do a little bit with them now. But I can't give you nearly enough time to ingrain these positions the way they should be. Because these, in order to really play melody on banjo, all of those individual melody note out of each chord positions should be as familiar to you as the chord positions themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? They're all just like, you know, right? That's, you can look at that as getting a C note out of a G chord. But what you're really doing is getting the fourth degree of the scale out of a G shape, out of an F shape. And that works. Put it anywhere. And it works.
So you recommend practicing scales out of each of those positions?
Scales are a really good place to start. And it's nobody ever says on banjo, practice scales. But in fact, you don't have to do this long, because what will happen, once you get a little familiar with these things, you tie this in with your ear training. And instead of playing scales, you start playing tunes. And we're going to do that right now. We're going to go back to our old friend Will the Circle, the Unbroken. And but we're not going to play it. We're going to play it. We're going to play it an octave higher. Now you see what I'm doing here? That ain't going to work. So when you move up, when you move around with these chords, you should have brought some water.
There's right behind you.
Wow.
It's a miracle.
I should have brought $1 million. Should have brought my Ferrari.
No, I couldn't get it all over the thing.
It only works once. You ask for it.
I'll just have to be happy with it. I am. So when you're picking your, give me the room because my voice is starting to wear out a little. I've got another class to teach after this one. When you're picking which chord shapes to use to do this melody, what you're going to do is look at a particular phrase and figure out the lowest and the highest notes in that phrase. So each of these. Why are there three chord shapes? Why are there three major chord shapes? What's a major chord?
Right, exactly.
What's that?
Because there is,
right. And that's partly true. You look at a G major chord, G B D. What happens if I take that bottom G away and put a G on top, an octave higher.
Different
inversion. If I put a D on the bottom, D G D. So each think of G chord not as three notes, but as this pile of G's, B's, and D's goes off as far as you can hear. And any three that you slice out of the middle of that pile are going to start with either G, B, or D. So, if I do a bar chord, that starts with D. Right? If I do a D-shaped G chord, that starts with G. If I do an F-shaped G chord, that starts with B. That's why there are three. Because if I go up one more inversion, I've started with D, I've started with G, I've started with B, and the next time I'm going to start with D again. And that's another bar, just like this was a bar. So each chord, each of those chords has not only, you know, the right set of notes, but it also has a range. It has a low note and a high note. And what you do is you look for an inversion of the chord that fits the section of the melody you want to play at that moment. So when you're doing this, it's too easy when you're down here. Right, you get so many gifts from having this open G, and by having that octave and a fourth range between the low note and the high note without ever going above the fifth fret. If I wanted to play that phrase an octave higher, I can do that, but you see I have a problem already. First of all, what chord position or what shape am I playing that in? I'm really playing it out of this bar, and it doesn't work. So let me come up here to this F shape chord. I showed you how to do that. That works. The problem is the next note. So I could do and count that as a phrase. And then the next note's higher, I've got to go to a higher G chord inversion. I move up here. Okay, so I can do that. Right? But if I look at the bottom of the range of these chords, okay, that's within the range of this position. So there's that entire stretch of G chord in one place. Okay, we move on. C chord. Closest C chord to this is here. Right out of the chord. Just like when you did it down here, you move one finger, you're up here, you move one finger, and back to G. Right. Up. Then better.
Come away.
Where am I going to get that note? I can't get there from this shape. So what I do is I move up to the next chord, which is the fourth. It's still G, right? But I just a second. I'm going to give you a chance to do this. So what I can do is treat there's a better as a phrase. Play that here. And then play that whole phrase up at the bar. I could play the entire phrase at the bar. The problem is that it doesn't roll well. Because remember, what's the next step going to be? You're gonna take this melody skeleton and you're gonna build rolls around it, and you want the rolls to sound good. You could roll inside.
Like
right, it does. Yeah, you get higher. The higher you get up the neck, the more you sound like Ralph Sand. You don't always want to sound like Ralph Sand. So in the Skyhorn, next chord's D. Where's the closest D? So it shares the 12th fret with the G chord. In the sky, and you're at the end. So let me put all that together, and then I want you guys to do this. So you're starting from the D shape, and you got one circle, the unbroken by end. Chord change to C, move up a fret, by or by end. Back to the G, back to D or F. There's a better. Up to the bar. Down to D. Same fret. The sky. no choice of where you want to put that final G note.
I don't
care. But we want it in this octave.
Oh, okay.
You can do it again on the fifth string if you want. You can just go anywhere at all if you want to.
Yeah, just like that.
So, but that's taste. Now you're at the point where you're making decisions because you like the way something sounds, not because you can't figure out how to play.
Could you round that up and put it into a roll now that you got the progression for us?
So let me take it all the way through, and then I'll leave you for a few minutes and drink my water and let you pick. So same as down here, quarter notes, roll notes. I'm embellishing a little. Okay, I'll play around with that a little bit. Stuff home and work on. But now, I'm going to take you one step farther on this. Let's say you want to play in D. Remember, this whole session is supposed to be about playing in different keys. So let's say we're going to play this, but we're going to play it in D. D is really nice because you have that low root note that you don't have in any other key, the lowest note in the banjo. You also have a problem because the fifth string really doesn't fit. Not only doesn't it fit, but if you play it against the first string in the D chord, you get Alfred Hitchcock. So it'd be nice if you could pull that fifth string into the D chord. Okay. Move your capo or put your capo on just on the fifth string up to A. And now when you roll against the fifth string, it's going to sound like it's part of the D chord. Okay. Now I'm not going to give you but one more line of instruction, and then I'm going to set you loose for another couple of minutes. I want you to take what you just did up here in G. Take that D-shaped G chord that you played up here, move it down so it's actually a D, and your fifth string's capoed on A. I want you to play exactly what you played up here. Play it down here. Stretches will be a little bit bigger, but other than that, it should be playable. So, see, just look for that melody. Look for the melody first. Play the melody as a skeleton, and then try to play the rolls in. Put the rolls in. Play a tune in D, this is what you do. And it's really cool because there are these two really important banjo skills that both seem kind of a little out of reach and both seem really hard, but they're actually, first of all, in reach because you just did it, and they're the same skill, right? The same thing, you do the same things up here as you do here. Up here you're playing in G, up here you're playing, down here you're playing in D, and you've got to change the fifth string along with it. But anything you're used to doing up the neck, and if you're used to playing, I don't know how many of you play Fireball Nail. Thank you. that high break. D is, once you start playing in D, once you get the hang of it, it's the coolest key to play in. It just sounds so good because you've got it's rooted.
Yeah.
Can we do it in C?
I'll get C in a second. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. C is a little different, but it's the same basic idea. So anything you do, you do in both keys. And I want to actually Fireball Mail actually brings up one other position that it's important to know. This is the one place where you sort of get away from traditional full chord shapes. When you're playing, first of all, when you're playing a partial chord. Like if you're up here and you're playing that much of the D chord, you don't need the third and fourth strings for some reason. It happens a lot. The higher up the neck you go, the less you need the lower strings. When you do that, you can use any fingers, right? You should use the same fingers that you would use if you were playing the full D chord. So if you play the D chord here and all you need is these two fingers, should use your index and little finger. Even though you might feel more comfortable index and ring, index and little finger, because that way if you ever need to go down to those lower strings, you've got the right fingers available. Plus, when you're moving around and doing these and doing these alternate melody notes, you can fall back on all those same positions that you learned when you were working with full chord shapes. It's less to remember. But here's the last chord position. This is a variation on this G chord, on this ninth fret G chord, and it comes out of Sally Gooden. So if you played that G chord and you only wanted to play the top two strings, my rules would say play it with your middle finger and your pinky. And that gives you all access to all of the scale that we talked about before, the D-shaped scale. But the other way to play it is index and ring. And what that gives you is access to all the notes above that chord. So what you can do with your pinky, this is play, if you can reach it, the 12th fret on the first string, play the 11th fret on the second, blue note, right? You can play the 10th fret on the second string, that's a nice one. You can play the 10th fret on the third string, that gives you a G7. That's all pinky. That's all just one finger ranging around and with the freedom you gave. You also, from there, tension resolution. Where am I going from there? G7. Going to C.
Yeah.
Right. Well, put your middle finger down on the third string, ninth fret. And move your pinky over to the first string, and there's C. So you got, this is actually, that's actually a move worth practicing. So from, basic position, two fingers,
right.
Index ring.
On what fret are you?
I'm on 8 and 9. Your middle finger goes down on the third string, 9. Basically, then there's an E minor chord, by the way. So there's another chord you get out of this shape. It's the shape it keeps on giving. Put your pinky down one finger above your middle on the third string, 10th fret. There's G7. Okay, now. All you have to do, don't move anything else. Just move your pinky between the third string, G7, and the first string. C major. Right? Yeah. Right, you got it. Right. So you got G7 to C. But wait, there's more. You also get by moving, leave your ring finger down on the first string, move your index finger back and over one, so you'll be on the third string, 7th fret. So it's a wide stretch. This could be a little uncomfortable.
What's happening with the second string?
What's happening with what?
Second string.
You're not playing. You can. It's an octave to the first. But those two notes and the fifth string make a complete closed G chord. What?
So we've taken the fifth string to the octave.
Yes. Yeah, we're... I'm not in D. I'm not in D. I'm sorry. Okay. So, for this, there are two good reasons for doing what I'm about to suggest to you, and only one of them has to do with playing in different keys. The other is that you should learn Sally Gooden out of the Scruggs book, because it's just a great tune. And it exercises that position better than anything. Cumberland Gap comes close, but Sally Gooden. You can just see all the stuff we were doing. So that's a tune worth learning, because it gives you that exercise. What time is it?
It's a quarter after.
Are people wandering? People wandering around outside because they want to come in here? Or?
They're just
3:45. So we got another 10 minutes. I still got to cover C. Fortunately, that won't take long.
I want to point out the middle finger on Sally Gooden, because how many people do that now?
Right. This is from Bill Keith, direct from Earl Scruggs. Okay, Bill, when he was writing the Scruggs book, tabbed out all of these tunes, and he was sitting down with Earl to review them, and he did this. He did. And Earl said, "No, that's wrong." And Bill said, "No, that's exactly what I slowed it down. I'm playing exactly the notes you play." He said, "No." He said, "You're letting that E note ring make it sound like an E minor chord." So there's no E minor chord in Sally Gooden. So play it and get off. Normally you want notes to ring. In this case, if you let that note ring, you're stating the wrong chord. So Bill said, You know, how do you write in tablature when you're not playing the third string? Don't fret. Okay. Yeah. So nobody gets that because it's not actually written down. But now you know. So C. Here's the thing about C. First of all, you've got two chords that you had in G. You have C and you have the C chord. You know what to do with the C chord. We went through that. Right. We went through that scale. You know what to do with G. Tremendous amount of overlapping skills. This is why I said C won't take long. The only new chord in here is F. And F is just like closed. It's a closed F shaped chord. So once you learn that scale, you'll know how to do F. So you know where to get the scale notes for F. So now when you do school circle, the unbroken. G, you have to go up, or C rather. G, back to C. Just like before. And seriously, that was kind of a joke. But there's another thing you can do with C. That's actually all I have to say about playing an open C. Except that you're missing the one thing that makes playing D so cool, which is that low root note. So, as an alternate tuning, leave everything else the same, just like open G. Just tune the fourth string down to C, and you got it back. All you have to remember now is whenever you fret the fourth string, you have to fret it two frets higher. You can sort of get used to this. Again, go to the Scruggs book, which is the source of just a lot of great ideas, and learn Home Sweet Home. Right in that tuning, and it really kind of gets you used to it. Even fretting. And now here you are, just what we were talking about before. This phrase, how many of you have tackled Home Sweet Home? Right? That's F. That's C. That's C. That's G. That's F. That's C. So if you go down, and right? It's just everything comes out of the chords, and that just brings me back to what I was saying. You go up the neck, and just you know your chords, you know how to get the melody out of them, and you can play anything. As long as you're humming it to yourself at the same time. Okay, we actually have 5 more minutes if somebody has questions. But thanks, Richard. Welcome. Favorite Scruggs thing. Yep. Everyone knows that ending. So Scruggs would do that in C. You got a note, you might as well use it.
Okay. Thank you.